I'm Amy Hall. I'm here with Greg Kokel from Stand to Reason, and we're here to answer your questions on the hashtag SDR Ask podcast. So you ready for the first one, Greg? Okay, so Dandy Prime asks, if the unborn is a human, when does child support start? Can you deport a pregnant mother who is carrying a U.S. citizen? Can she insure her unborn child and collect as she miscarries? These are some of the snide questions I've gotten regarding the abortion issue. Thoughts?
Okay. Okay, now I'm glad I got the context there at the end, and maybe we'll deal with each individual one. But I just want to make an important strategic point in answering this question, okay? The questions, it sounds like, that follows are policy concerns that determine, that are based on how the government deals with different circumstances, all right? They are not at the heart moral and ethical concerns. Now, policy concerns are based on ethical and moral issues, all right? But first you have to solve the moral and ethical questions before you can have meaningful policy decisions. So if you have a policy decision says that we ought to help the give money to the poor as a governmental enterprise, you know, say welfare. Well, that is based on certain understandings of what it means to be human, what morality is like, what our obligations to other human beings are, and what obligation the government has to other people. You can't answer the policy question until you get those other things in place. The question that we have that we're facing with regards to abortion is the unborn a valuable human being in the same sense that you and I are valuable human beings? Incidentally, a two-year-old, probably most people would not deny that a two-year-old is a valuable human being in the same sense that you and I are. But policy concerns apply differently to adults than they do to children, all right? And so you can have different policy concerns even though you have the same essential value of the human being, because there are other factors that enter in that justify the different policy points of view or applications in that situation. So I want people to get a general understanding of how this kind of stuff works, because people fire out all those kinds of stuff like, well, blah, 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 you know, and they have all these things, and they are not sensitive to the nuanced circumstances here. It's like saying, for example, if you think a unborn is a real human being and a place is burning down that has unborn embryos in it, you know, then you would have to save all of those multitude of embryos before one living child, okay? And so they got you there. Well, all they can possibly show in that is that the Christian is inconsistent in the way or the pro-lifer is inconsistent in his response. It doesn't demonstrate that the unborn is not a real human being. That is determined on completely different grounds. And there's a very straightforward argument that we offer. The unborn is separate from the mother. It's alive. By the way, people say, well, nobody knows when life begins. Is it growing? Yeah. And it's alive. End of issue. Okay, what is it that's growing in there? Oh, that's mom. That's her body. Really? Yep. Does it have the same DNA? No. Then it ain't mom. What is it? Is it a tapeworm? No, it's a thing that mom is producing through reproduction. And guess what? We all know that critters of all kinds reproduce after their own kind, right? So when mom is in the family way, she's not wondering, gee, what will it be this time? You know, I've already had 7 kids. Wonder what's going to be now. Then she gives birth. Oh, my gosh, another human being. 7, 8 in a row. What are the chances? You know, oh, come on. Human beings reproduce other human beings. So it's a very straight trip from the fact that a woman is pregnant to the conclusion that the thing she's carrying is another separate individual human being like herself that she's producing and is the mother of. That's not controversial. Now the question is an ethical question. What is the right way to treat human beings? And does the fact that the unborn is smaller or in the womb in a different location or doesn't have the abilities that other human beings have disqualify that human being from the kinds of protections we provide each other. Now, that is all that matters in the question of abortion. What is the unborn? A human being. How do we treat other human beings who are in the way and inconvenient and we don't want? And that really covers most of the bases. All right? That's the moral question. That's how you answer the broader question of abortion. Then when it comes to policy questions, let's go back to the question here. What were the specific concerns again?
So the first one is, when does child support start?
All right. And the next one is?
Can you deport a pregnant mother who is carrying a U.S. citizen? Can she insure her unborn child and collect if she miscarries?
Okay. So let's just say my answer is, I do not have the foggiest idea. Does that change the status of the unborn as a valuable human being? It doesn't change any of it. What we're asking is, what is the proper policy concerns regarding these individuals? And it could be that there are different answers for each one simply because of the nature of the circumstances of the situation of that child. By the way, in the state of California, you know they have these HOV lanes, high occupancy vehicles. You know what a high occupancy is? What,
two.
15, 20, 30 people? Two! High occupancy, two! If you have two people in the vehicle, you can drive in the diamond lane. That includes a woman who's pregnant, by the way, which doesn't take any other cars off the road. I've had discussions about this before.
I did not know that. However, I did know that there are fetal homicide laws.
Of course. In two-thirds of the states of the nation. Mm-hmm. You kill the mom when she's pregnant, it's a double homicide. All right? So there's an example of how the law is able to make a proper, well, I think in the case of the HOV lanes, it's dumb, because I was getting to a moment ago, having an infant in the womb, in the car, doesn't take another car off the freeway, because that kid don't have a driver's license. But that just goes to the foolishness of the so-called HOV lanes, in my view. I think they complicate matters, not improve them. Another issue. I already have my rant about that last year. But the but it does show the appropriate application in fetal homicide laws, where, ironically, even in the state of California, you have laws like that, with the exception of abortion. So how is it in the eyes of the law, the unborn is a valuable human being that, for whom it's homicide to take its life, actionable, and with the exception, if mom says it's okay to kill the baby and a doctor does it, how does that change the essential nature of the individual being killed? It doesn't. It's foolishness. Mm-hmm. But these are good examples about how there are distinctions made, appropriate distinctions made for individual policy concerns based on the unique circumstances that we're facing.
I've had people ask me questions like these also, and I think there are two possibilities. Either they're trying to show you that this is too difficult to figure out, or they're trying to show you that, look at these absurdities that result from you saying it's a human being. Well, first of all, whenever you are dealing with a human being, things are going to be more complicated. Obviously, it's more complicated to take care of a baby than it is a doll.
Yeah.
So there are going to be all sorts of things that you're going to have to figure out how to take care of it, what the laws are regarding it. Obviously, that's not absurd that you have to think about those things.
Right.
But my second point to them is always, well, you realize that abortion used to be illegal. Somehow we figured all these things out. What were we going around saying, this is crazy, look at all these things, we can't? No, we figured it out.
We are able to make the distinctions that are appropriate for the circumstances in these cases. Just think, if we said, you know, a four-year-old's a human being. Are you kidding me? Yes, and we're going to give four-year-olds driver's licenses now. Come on. That is so absurd. Well, it is absurd, but not because the unborn's a human being, because driver's license is the kind of thing that applies discriminately in different situations. You know, sometimes it doesn't based on other circumstances. And all of these examples that were given can be figured out.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a, you know, not a big deal. And by the way, if you have a hard time with anything, it's not easy to figure out. What we want to do is we want to make sure we take the option that clearly affirms the fact that the unborn is a human being that is valuable in itself,
mm-hmm.
which is why every mother who is pregnant at any stage of her pregnancy talks about her baby.
Mm-hmm.
Unless she wants to kill it.
Okay, so speaking of babies, let's go on to the next question. Okay. This one comes from Mr. Speedy.
Why, is he being kind of baby with this question?
No.
No, okay.
Are there moral issues to be concerned with designer babies?
I think the answer is going to be yes, but maybe not in the way most people think. So I haven't worked through this myself very much, but my impulse is to think that I'm still thinking about it, you know, because I just got a book from Ken Samples and Fazrana that I can't remember the title of it, but it's about
Humans 2.0. Was it?
Yeah,
that
that's
one?
It. Yeah. Humans 2.0, which is about transhumanism and designer human beings where you have different ways of genetically altering or adding genetic material, like maybe from animals, possibly. I don't know the details of what they cover, or different machine parts, you know, and different ways, so that you have this human plus animal, human plus machine, whatever it happens to be, to try to, you know, get superhumans is the general idea. Again, I can't reflect what they say in their book because I just saw the title, but that's generally what transhumanism is dealing with. And I do think that there's a serious problem there, and I'm interested to see how they handle the moral boundaries in that. On the other hand, I think that on one level, of course, it a lot depends on what you mean by what was the
designer word? Babies.
Designer babies, and how, if what a person is doing is killing human beings because they're not just right, this is clearly immoral, and this is what happens with Down's children all the time. You know, when you get an amniocentesis, that's a search and destroy mission, basically. And by the way, pro-lifers who have children that seem to be Down, or I should say they're pregnant with children that might be Down, they get an unbelievable amount of pressure from the medical community to abort. And in the country of Iceland, they are proudly have announced that they've virtually eliminated Down syndrome in their country, but it's only because they kill all these children before they're born. And every once in a while, two or three a year slip by, you know. So that is completely beyond the pale, obviously. Now, when it comes to, I guess the only way to get a designer baby is to do genetic manipulation. And, I mean, apart from selective abortions, if you're able to do an amnio and then find out something about the genetics, say, this isn't, we don't want a blue-eyed one, we want a brown-eyed kid, or vice versa. And then they have the abortion. Of course, like I said, that's beyond the pale. However, I just haven't really worked. I'm uncomfortable with the notion. And again, but I'm not sure exactly where the line is to be drawn. Maybe you've done more thinking about this.
Well, I think there are, you've touched on both, I think, the two ways that this could come about. First, not even.
Oh, I just thought of a third.
Before
way too,
you even get
ahead.
Into the pregnancy, they could have the embryos and they could know, you know, this is a boy, this is a girl, this
right.
is whatever.
Sex selection.
Right. So I think right now, most of what's happening involves
in that category.
Selecting from the embryos and then killing the ones you don't want and choosing the ones that you do, which, like you said, is obviously wrong.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets to the point where they're able to change the embryo, the DNA of the embryo to get the kind of baby you want, I think the problem then becomes, first of all, you're treating a human being like a commodity, not like when you're asking for a specific thing. If you're shopping for a specific kind of baby, you're already looking at the human being in a way that degrades their human dignity.
Do you think that would be true across the board? And what I'm thinking about is maybe occasions where there seems to be a potential for a physical defect, and the health of the child is in view, which certainly could be part of it. You know, if you have a gene that is defective that creates congenital defect and you can alter that or something like that, that would be a little different than getting the right eye color or fast twitch muscles or something like that that make better athletes.
Yes, those are definitely two different things. It's hard to imagine fixing the one without it starting to turn into the other. So I get really nervous about that. But yeah. I don't have any moral problem with correcting a genetic defect. As long as what you mean by that is you are correcting it in the embryo. You're not creating different ones and
right.
choosing
it's
the one
it's
you
not,
want.
It's not an aesthetic defect. It is a health defect. Maybe that's a way of distinguishing
yeah.
it. I just thought of a third category, though, and that is getting having in vitro fertilization, a woman's egg and someone else's sperm who is, say, an athlete or a Nobel Prize winner or something like that. That would be another way of designing the embryo for a certain outcome, but you're not actually messing with the embryo itself. And that, I think, is another way of treating the child as a commodity at that point. And it's dangerously close to that edge, and that would be a problem.
And realize that when you're doing that, you're making the baby about you.
Yeah.
This is something you want. You're not accepting the child that's given to you.
The
way we treat people, like if you treat people where you want them to be the perfect way you want them and anything else is something less.
Substandard.
Yeah. You're treating your child like a thing, and that will have an effect on the way that we see human beings in general. I really believe that. And I think we're seeing that happen with IVF, with all of the discarded embryos and the frozen embryos and embryos given to research. The way people talk about the embryos now has changed because of the way we're treating them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that will have an effect with the way we see human beings
right.
who are born
this
as
is
well.
My concern about cloning, which was more of a big issue 15, 20 years ago. But the difficult, I don't think there is a moral problem with cloning per se. That's twinning, you know, and we're not supposed to make human beings. I said, we do it all the time. It's called parenthood, you know. The question, though, is how we view the human being whose life was generated through the process of cloning. And I think the tendency, there is a temptation to think of that as a product, as owned by the cloner, and one could do what they want. So let's clone a whole bunch of human beings so we have all these livers for liver transplant, for example. And there you're creating a race of bona fide, valuable human beings to be used for sacrificial purposes to benefit other people. Bad move.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do one more. This one comes from Timothy Turner. What's your opinion of the practice of preaching in front of abortion mills, gay pride events, etc.? I'm personally torn on the issue. I'm thrilled they're hearing the gospel, but many times it seems like it's unnecessarily confrontational and not very winsome.
Well, this is a very good observation. It the gospel words are not magic. It isn't as if you just get the words out and the magic of the words start working on people. I lived in Carson here in Southern California for a number of years, and every once in a while in the main intersection between Main Street and Carson Boulevard, there would be a bunch of church people that would stand on the corner, and the minute you got stuck at a red light, they'd be dancing around your car with all these signs about Jesus, with the essential gospel or verses and stuff like that. You know, I mean, one might argue, well, that's the truth, and God's word won't return void. Well, actually, if you read that whole passage, it says God's word will not return void, but will accomplish what he intends for it. Not what we intend for it, but what he intends for it. And I don't think he anticipated or expected expected. He's omniscient, so he knew this was going to happen. I don't think he desires or sees his word as magical if you're dancing around with John 3:16 and annoying drivers that this is going to have some magical effect on them. And so I think the question that needs to be asked is what will be the impact in the way that we're communicating this precious and valuable truth. And I don't see anything wrong with having a place at those events to create conversation. And the question is, what kinds of conversations are created? And more specifically, how is the Christian comporting him or herself in that circumstance? That's the critical point of information. That is the agora, that is the marketplace of sorts. Nothing wrong with going out into the marketplace, but a lot depends on how you are manifesting and communicating that truth. If what you end up doing is poking people in the eye, essentially, figuratively speaking, with your ideas, well, that's not helping and that's not a benefit to the gospel. You may be harming the gospel. It might be better for you to go home.
I think another good idea would be to try to make sure you're not doing it under the genre of protest. And by that, I mean, if you have signs on sticks and you're walking around, people associate that with protest.
That's a great point.
So if you are going to preach, try and find a way that doesn't bring that to mind. Mm-hmm. You're telling the good news. You're opening yourself up to them. You're showing them love. And signs on sticks don't communicate that. So if there's another way to do that, I think that would be the preferred way.
Yeah, that's great. That's a really great point. I think the being in front of an abortion clinic may be in a separate category. Certainly the point you're making is a valuable point, although sometimes, see, when you have a policy issue, then protesting the policy may have a place.
I have no problem with protesting. I'm just saying if you're preaching, don't do it in the style of protesting.
Okay, good point. Yeah. And then, one thing I wanted to say about sidewalk counselors is they have been very effective in many cases of changing people's minds. Mm-hmm. I've heard a number of stories here, but they are really sidewalk counselors. They're engaging in a friendly, gracious, loving fashion, trying to persuade a woman not to take the life of her child. And that, I think, is entirely legitimate. And there are these protective bubble zones, you know, you've got to stay like 25 yards away and all that. Okay, fair enough. You can still have an influence being a little further distance.
Yeah. And I would say those are three different things. So you have the sidewalk counselors, you have the protesters, and you have the preachers.
Yeah.
And so I think if I don't think there's anything wrong with any of those three. I just think they need to stay to be what they are.
Yes, no good. And not only that, but sometimes preachers sound like protesters. So if you want, I think, a superb example of a great street preacher, Ray Comfort is, I think, the quintessential, because he's pleasant, he's warm, he's friendly, he's funny, but he gets to the point, he draws lots of crowds because he's an engaging and borderline lovable figure, even though he's preaching a message that is one that people might disagree with. And so. Yeah, don't be a preacher that sounds like a protester.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the point, the takeaway there.
Well, thank you, Greg. And thank you again for all of you who send in your questions. We look forward to hearing from you on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.